Hello and welcome to another episode of LedgerCast. I'm excited today. I have a special guest on. You could say I'm biased considering Ubik is probably my largest, or no, it's definitely my largest altcoin position historically and currently, for better or for worse at times. I'm really pleased to have Alex Sterk on from the Ubik project. So welcome, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So can you clarify, we were just talking about this a little bit, but your role within the Ubik project and then how the Ubik Corporation fits in with that so that we can kind of understand where you're coming from?
Yeah. So I am the community manager for the Ubik cryptocurrency. So I kind of help mediate the Discord, but we have a couple other moderators and making sure, you know, projects know about each other and there's kind of coordinating things between all the different projects that are building on Ubik. Then I'm also the CEO of the Ubik Technologies Incorporated, which is the registered corporation that we have established for managing Ubik assets like the GitHub, the Twitter handle, the Medium, and then also some of our corporate partnerships that actually result in some consulting work. So it's an important distinction to make that the corporation doesn't actually have any direct control over the network. Having something like the GitHub does give us, I guess, a good brand recognition to have kind of that, I guess, subjective control of the network. But we're definitely one of the biggest development firms, I guess, for the network to try and make sure that things are going according to plan. But it's a permissionless network. Any miner can plug in and try and have control or a stake in the network. So we are very much at the whim of the miners in terms of the network.
I know we're going to definitely get into governance, because that's partially why, timing wise, I wanted you on the show now, because y'all are going through a lot of governance changes and how things are done. Historically, though, was it similar to the way Bitcoin worked, where miners would signal desired changes that they want to make based on proposals that were brought up either by the community or by leaders of the project? How has governance historically worked?
You mean in Ubik or just in blockchains in general?
No. For Ubik specifically, because with Bitcoin, you know, people that run nodes are essentially signaling one thing or the other. So I don't know if historically Ubik's worked that way as well.
Unfortunately, not. I guess the amount of support that we've had in terms of people mining the new network was really important to like switching over from our previous currency, and that's really the most amount of kind of on-chain governance we've been able to have implemented. But like, this is just kind of the nature of a lot of projects right now. A lot of the governance is happening off-chain. We're having these kind of open forum conversations. Ideas are definitely discussed transparently in the Discord, and trying to really get a feel for what is the community's kind of goals for the future. And this is where we kind of have some open-ended discussions on things like proof of stake, where we would like there to be more on-chain governance to kind of lead into the future of how consensus is reached on the platform. So that's really what we're getting started here with the governance system that we're building for Ubik to really do some more on-chain voting and polling.
Okay, cool. I want to dig into that a little more, but I should probably back up some and just get a better idea of, when did Ubik start and why did it start?
The Ubik network launched January 28th of last year. And that's when we took a snapshot of the previous project, which was Jumbox, for those who are around. And transferred that coin supply to the new network and switched from the Bitcoin code base to an Ethereum based code base, which really gives us a lot more functionality. It was something we really saw as becoming a very fast standard in the field of smart contracts, and was really well developed. Like Bitcoin is, you know, a very nice experiment, but I think there's a lot of repercussions from Satoshi's original programs that we're still dealing with to this day. But Ethereum is very much a chain that's built by programmers for programmers. It's more than just the proof of concept. It's got a lot more functionality that we were looking for as app developers. Like, a lot of people in our community wanted to utilize blockchains for more than just value transfer. So that's where we moved to the EVM. But the community or the original project started, I believe it was summer of 2014. So if Bitcoin started with an email list, Ubix started with an IRC chat filled with a lot of the development community at the time when altcoins were very early and fledging. There was less than 100 of them, and people were just kind of starting to wrap their heads on around what they could build and do. And it was one of the fairest launch coins at the time. I wasn't even in the IRC chat, but I had just kind of joined the Bitcoin or cryptocurrency community and wanted to really dip my feet into mining. So it was one of the first projects that I mined from the very beginning. I really appreciated the tack that was taken with launching a project properly. Even now to this day, people think it's easy just to host a token sale and that's going to, you know, build their blockchain out, or they're going to be able to build a community from that.
When it launched, there was a snapshot for token holders of the prior token, and then it immediately became a mineable coin. So has it always been GPU mined primarily, or were there ever like CPU efforts? Honestly, I don't know what the GPU mining world was like even just a year ago.
There wasn't a large majority, I guess, of really good coins to mine. It was primarily GPU mined. Something like Zcash had just launched earlier, and there was definitely bigger farms starting up for mining Zcash. We were very fortunate to get overwhelming support of miners when we first launched the network. We were able to sleep a little better knowing that the switch back to proof of work was rather successful, that we're not at risk of being double spent, because maintaining proof of work is it can be difficult at times. There's definitely more economic pressure on the network when you are proof of work. But in our view, it is fully permissionless when it's proof of work. We see a lot of the benefits of having proof of work as part of the consensus model. The GPU mining space has really exploded since then. Like, I think everyone and their mother has got a miner going now. So we are very fortunate that we designed the currency to really attract miners in terms of the long-term viability. So if you have an older GPU that maybe has less than 2 gigabytes of video memory, you're actually still able to mine Ubic for the next 6 years, where you need a 4 gigabyte card or bigger to mine Ethereum. So it's really out of the reach of a lot of old hardware.
Yeah, and that gets into, kind of how I gained my initial interest in the Ubic project. And it seemed at the time, I don't know how much that's still going on today, but like, it was almost pitched as a potential alternative to Ethereum for a smart contract ecosystem, and it almost had this vibe of like Ethereum functionality wise, but without a lot of the potential, you know, network breaking changes, a better commitment to backward compatibility, perhaps. Am I on point there? And can you go into a little bit of why did you decide to essentially take on Ethereum, which was already taking off so much as a project?
Yeah, well, when we first started the testnet, actually, there was a couple of Ethereum altcoins, as we'll call them, that were actually having a lot of issues with running smaller scale Ethereum networks. So we saw a need to improve the code base to allow networks to run on a smaller scale. But also, we really want to help push the standard of the Ethereum virtual machine, like the actual smart contract system that's built on top of the chain. So we saw this as an opportunity also to allow businesses to maybe build on a system that might be more reliable, because Ethereum very much is like a constant state of alpha. They're kind of like our testnet, I guess, but it's allowing us to really approach businesses with the ability to build today without worrying about uncertain tomorrow. But if you think of the EVM as like Linux, it is very much a basic kind of framework for a lot of computers today. And there are many implementations of Linux that are used, and some are more tailored to business applications. So we're trying to, I guess, be an open source version of the EVM that can be used for business.
I know y'all have had success bringing on several tokens to the Ubic platform. A couple that come to mind are like Geo and Dot and one that just left my brain. But I think there's what, six or seven, maybe eight open tokens?
Yeah. Tokens? So I think we have about eight tokens right now that actually trade on exchange with value. But one of the community built Block Explorers actually has a page that pulls all the ERC-20s built on Ubic. And I think there's over 50 of them that are,
okay,
you know, maybe test projects or just people playing around on chain. But we have about eight different projects, APX, Quark, Geo, Dot,
Rix and Ceph's.
Chefs and Ricks and betting win token was another one that we weren't officially supporting, but we found out about them recently and were able to add them onto the Explorer. So they would have a functionality in our official Explorer.
Cool. So I'm looking at the ubicscan.io assets page right now, and it seems combined market cap, The tokens are about a little over 30% of the total Ubic network market cap, and Ubic accounts for the other 65-70%. In addition to these tokens, how do you mix in, when you talk about being reliable for corporate blockchain usage and projects, how do y'all mix that in from a corporate standpoint? Does your consulting arm, is that something that you're actively doing? Like the Ubic corporate team is essentially proposing blockchain-based projects that are using Ubic and the underlying EVM infrastructure, and that's kind of your platform of choice for those projects?
So there are a number of consulting companies based here in Canada, but I think we're the only one with actually like a full-fledged public network that we can point to as our portfolio piece to say, like, look what we've done and look what we have available to us as well. So one of our partnerships is with Einstein Capital. We're building out a kind of a share structure on chain to be able to do their company governance using the blockchain and even a publicly auditable environment. So this is kind of there's a bit of overlap between the Ubic governance, which we're able to kind of do work for both projects at the same time. But it's very much using the EVM in a public space today. We're really excited to be working with them. Someone who really wants to push the boundaries of what's possible. But doing a lot of consulting work just with people who maybe want to learn more about cryptocurrencies, how to do proper storage. So consulting a little bit with hedge funds. And the other side of it too was lots of people wanting to do ICOs, but those are meetings that I kind of push back a bit more because ICOs really aren't our primary focus. A lot of what we've been interested in is helping people maybe migrate. So some of our old customers before Ubic was even a thing. We had some of our team who was helping build blockchains for people who wanted a blockchain-based asset, but now they're realizing that uh, you know, maintaining a blockchain, even if it is proof of stake, is a lot of cost and work in terms of maintaining nodes and servers and explorers, that sort of infrastructure. So we're helping them now migrate from their own chain to a token on Ubic. So instead of paying for that daily cost, they now pay per use using Ubic as gas for transactions. So that's where we have migrated over tokens like Quark and Geo, and we're planning on migrating Sphere and BitShares as well. Or sorry, not BitShares, BitSeeds. BitSeeds. So yeah, there's a couple of old projects that we really want to still support.
Cool. So what does your day-to-day look like then? Are you primarily working on Ubic community stuff, or are you primarily doing this consulting business? And I guess to kind of put a bow on the consulting side of things, what does that corporation look like? Is this a multi-person company, or is this you and one other person, or what, you know, what's the scope, I guess, of this effort?
Okay, so yeah, my day-to-day, I guess, is usually logging into the Discord and seeing what conversation has happened overnight, because there's always something going on there, it seems, whether it's some development or just chatter about the industry. Yeah, currently I'm actually in Vancouver right now for this Einstein Capital project to kind of wrap up the first phase of it. But as we move forward into like phase two and three, it's going to require a little bit more help than just myself. So one of their developers on the project and on the Ubic corporate team is Luke Williams. So he's currently based in Seville in Spain, working on one of the other companies that builds on Ubic, CryptoTech. So he's actually, we're making plans to have the office based in Toronto with one of our other developers who currently is based in Vancouver here. So we are currently, you know, consolidating some of our development efforts in the region of Toronto. That will kind of help really, I guess, work with some of the more traditional finance companies who are more used to seeing an office space, because yeah, the internet companies of today aren't built in a garage anymore. They're built online by people who sometimes have never met each other in person. So I'm kind of fortunate, I guess, that I've met a majority of our development team in person. That's part of my reason, I guess, for being the community manager slash CEO, was really helping coordinate and bring together the conversation of all the different arms of Ubic.
Yeah, so let's get into a little bit about the project side of things. The original Bitcoin Talk announcement thread for Ubic was written by Julian Yap, and he's the lead developer for the project.
I would call him like our chief scientist. He definitely works on the consensus level code. We are looking to have a bit more help in that front too, because it is very much a side project now that Julian is working full-time at Bittrex as mm-hmm. one of their code auditors there. We are fortunate that we do get a little bit of GitHub activity from him in terms of maintaining the core client for Ubic, keeping it aligned with Ethereum's changes. And as we move forward with implementing new features and whatnot, new opcodes, that sort of thing. Julian is he was the original creator of original token back in 2014, and he's now kind of taken more of a seat back to let the rest of us build more on it. But yeah, it's very much a multi-person company now. Like Luke has been doing a lot of great work in terms of building up the Explorer and some of our new features like the token or the governance system. So we do have some other development teams, and we have another core dev that we just met up with this year in Barcelona in Spain, Aldo Barrero. He's working on some of the core framework infrastructure for Ubic dApps to use. So we do have a number of people who are contributing to the GitHub, but we always could use some more. And we also have a lot of great community projects too, some community block explorers as well. So thank you very much to Eric for his efforts and ubic.cc. He's built a wonderful explorer as well. So yeah, it's we're trying to be more than just a startup company. There is an open source project that is happening here too.
Yeah, how do you give the pitch when you're looking to bring on blockchain developers to contribute to a community project? Because my understanding is that any blockchain developer, much less any with experience or the higher tier quality, whatever you want to call it, are in extreme demand right now because of the number of projects that are out there. And there are just endless numbers of jobs for people that have familiarity using or developing on the EVM at all. So what's your pitch for people getting involved in Ubic versus other projects that are EVM based or other blockchain technologies in general?
Well, the Ubic Discord, even before when it was on Slack or even the original IRC room, is very much a developer focus. So if you have questions on how to really get your feet wet and learn more in the blockchain development space, like it's one of the best places to come and pick the brains of some of the people who've worked in the industry for anywhere from 5 years or less. But this is where we have some community projects like Block Explorer. Block Explorer is a very good first project for anyone looking to really understand more how they can contribute or really get their feet wet or have something for their portfolio in the blockchain space. Is build a Block Explorer. It gets you acquainted with the data that is in every block, how it is organized, and how to reference it properly, and just how to kind of deal with referencing that data, because it is a public database. So building a search tool like a Block Explorer is a great way to kind of get involved. So it's one thing we're trying to incentivize with proposals is more community Block Explorers.
What are some of the challenges of day-to-day running operations with an altcoin? Because you have to have, I know I'm familiar with open source software and the challenges of getting people to contribute to anything. But in this scenario, I mean, when you're running a crypto project, there's a lot of financial incentives for various people, bad actors especially. So how do you spend effort to secure the network and to do things like attract nodes for the platform and people to commit to participating in a platform long term versus looking at them as short term investments or whatever, that kind of, how do you differentiate between those things, I guess?
Well, one thing we've done in the Discord is really create clear channels of where something like price discussion happens. So there is a Ubic price channel where there's all the ship posting you could ask for, as well a trading channel for more general market discussions. But yeah, then we have more focused channels like mining for people who really want to understand how to build like a GPU mining operation. A developer channel, a programming channel, just for people wanting to have more broad information. One thing I think for improvement with the governance system is having more of a jobs posting or a bounty posting board for things that people can come and work on. And that will include more than just programming, doing things like writing or building logos or t-shirt designs, just kind of like community marketing projects. These are things that we do want to encourage more, but the job postings board, I think, will help a lot. We right now have been fortunate that we're close enough that we can have some organization and someone like myself kind of helping coordinate, you're working on this project, so you should post here or talk to this guy. Like even with Geo, we were having some development work going on with building the snapshot tool, and that would turn into a community effort of people who had expertise in something like C# to help revamp the tool to work with a different algo. So the job postings board would kind of be, I guess, one way that most projects can have like. Ooh, I wouldn't say we are anti-roadmap, but we are definitely more of a fluid development roadmap. We you know, have some short-term goals and some more vague long-term goals. But
more bazaar than cathedral. If you're familiar with the concept of the cathedral and the bazaar, this is a concept that comes to me from the open source side of things. I come from the WordPress world, which is just a huge content management system. And it's kind of behind this idea that we build things when people show up, you know, to build them. And you can have some centralized design, which is the cathedral idea. But the way open source projects and community projects typically work is the bazaar model, where, you know, something's created because people show up and do it. So I kind of get the feel, I'm a lurker. So I'm, I trade stuff, but I'm a lurker. When you marry a bag, you know, you tend to do things like go into the Discord and, you know, read all the reports and stuff. So I've gotten to know the Ubik project over the past, whatever, 6 or 8 months. And I think there's just this element that's always, drawn me to it, of this kind of community thing that it's got going on. And I also have liked the openness where you talk about the quarterly reports, and it's always laying it out there of like, this is what's going on. And we're not like putting this stuff out there to, you know, try to super pump this coin. Even when you announced this governance token, it was like, almost like, how do we announce this in a way that lowers the hype as much as possible by stating that you were begging exchanges not to list it or something like that? You know, that's what it seemed like. So let's get into that. And first of all, where did the concept of the quarterly reports come from? And how have you seen those improve involvement in the project?
I've been the writer of all the quarterly reports, and it was about 4 months after launch. I was like, okay, well, we should probably have a pretty good summary of all the stuff we've done, because it's been a very busy kind of quarter since the network stabilized, trading was re-enabled, and we started swapping some tokens over and even doing a crowd sale on the platform. So just trying to summarize everything in a report, I'm like, well, I should probably be doing these a bit more regularly. So we just decided, let's make this a quarterly report. It's, anyone who is kind of a busy person who, you know, is only an occasional lurker, I think, can find the time to read a quarterly report. So, and now with building governance out, we're going to definitely structure things around the quarterly report in terms of having, you don't need to be constantly involved in the overall community if you just want to be alone running your own node and building your own dApp kind of privately. You can just check in 4 times a year, and then you're kind of up to speed on where exactly everything is. So the quarterly reports has kind of been that main outlet, but I think the community is always asking for a bit more, but this goes back to just the marketing side of things. Like, we're not anti-marketing, I guess. It's just we believe in a lot more organic word of mouth type marketing. So, doing some of the conferences here in Canada, and even I did a recent trip to the Netherlands for some conferences. Really trying to meet people in person and explain to them the value proposition, because we're seeing now, like, Google and Facebook are banning ads because none of this stuff really deserves that type of advertising. I don't think that is a proper medium for outreach. You're not going to reach the people that you're after. So we're trying to make sure that any, marketing is very much organic and driven by our progress. So that's where the Einstein project actually resulted in some PR for us, because of the actual gravity of what we were doing. That's kind of where our focus is. I don't really see a proposal for a marketing company anytime soon, but, some community driven efforts, might be kind of cool. So,
let's get to the governance side of things, 'cause I want to be able to spend some time on how y'all are thinking about, Escher in terms of, I guess, a token and a process. So where did the idea come up to have a separate token for governance, first of all? Because I'm not 100% certain why just holding Ubik and running a node and signaling can't offer the same thing. So what's the purpose of the Escher token to start off?
Well, it's to kind of separate the use case of UBIC. So UBIC is used for transaction fuel. Like that's its primary use case, is for running applications. If you're constantly having to lock it up in Signal for proposals, then you're not able to use it in the same way. So it's kind of helping differentiate the use case from it. But it also goes to the fact that Escher is going to be our de facto utility token. So yes, the first use case is governance, but there's a lot of open source protocol tokens that are being built that we can build that same functionality into the Escher token, and doing things like using the online wallet Sparrow, which is a fork of MetaMask. Now you don't have to keep your entire UBIC balance there to easily use it for a lot of these applications. Like we're not trying to say it's valueless, but it is definitely something that's more focused on utility rather than trading. So the security metrics that you would use for it can be a little bit less. Like the plan for it is that it's going to be fairly inflationary, at least at the beginning. To allow for, you know, distribution and to make it kind of its own little thing. Like, I guess, you know, it's kind of our way of rewarding active participants as well in the space. So like we if you just have a big UBIC bag but you're not paying attention, then you all of a sudden want to come in and upvote masternodes or downvote proof of stake. Well, if you haven't been hanging around for the last 2 years, well, you're not a very active participant in the community. So the whole idea of this airdrop is doing it through a claim process. So just having UBIC in a balance isn't enough, or having it even sitting on an exchange and hoping they're going to credit you. You actually need to have it in your own address. You need to interact with the claim contract. And then on the block that we've selected, which is on April 25th, block 448.
Okay, yeah. So I want to get into this because I went through this process. So this is like the true, I even jokingly changed my Twitter handle to Ledger the Community Member, because this is the first time that I've really, you know, just said, yeah, you know what, I'm going to decide to keep something through to the point of even getting into the governance side of things, or like trying to dig in. Because as I've gotten more into this ecosystem, one of the things I've realized is I've learned a ton about crypto and the promise and all these things, but I've still focused on most of what I'm doing from a trading perspective, and less about, hey, how are open source projects within this world working and how are they operating? And I'm naturally drawn to open source projects. So I wanted to go through this process and dig deeper into the governance mechanisms that are built into UBIC and the process of participating in that. So I went to the website. So if you go to ubicsmart.com/Escher, there's this dashboard that you come on where I went through this, but tell me if I'm wrong or like how it'll be different between the test and the live, because that's one of my questions. So you go to this page, and let's just say you're like a random, you know, person with a UBIC bag. First thing you would do is you'd need to have tokens off exchange. So UBIC, impressively for a small cap project, has both Ledger and Trezor wallet support. So if you have your tokens on one of those, then you can go through the UBIC version of my Ether wallet, which is called, help me out here. Pyrus, that's right. Thank you. Yeah. So if you go to the Pyrus website, it works like my Ether wallet or my cryptos or whatever they call it now. And you interface with it that way, and you can essentially interact with the smart contract. And y'all provide some JSON code that essentially is going to trigger the contract and allow you to send a zero UBIC, like zero gas transaction to claim this airdrop. So if you have 500 UBIC, then it just gives you 12, or you put in a claim for 12 Escher per UBIC and you get whatever that is, 60,000 or 66,000 Escher. Yeah. So the claim process is kind of what you're talking about in terms of making people go an extra mile, I guess, versus just holding some UBIC?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple reasons for doing this. Like we were, you know, early or late last year, we were discussing just, you know, airdropping the token for governance, but we realized like that's going to, one, consume a lot of gas. Two, it's going to create a lot of kind of dust balances with all these, you know, addresses that might have like less than one UBIC in it. And three, it doesn't really serve to reward active participants. So we want people to actually use the chain and interact with the contract. So that's where this airdrop is being done through a claim process. So you have to, you know, say, I would like to participate. And that's a very important first step, and it keeps the chain a lot cleaner. And I think it's the better way of, you know, distributing a governance token like this.
And so far, this is a test claim process currently, right? Or is this, if you've gone and interacted with the address right now, I did this the other day. So have I done this for the real one, or have I done this as a test? I'm not actually totally sure.
This is still the test claim. So we have about 3.7, roughly the end of this month. And then I am just currently finalizing the blog post that's going to be outlining our full proposal details and the final claim page, because Luke just did a new push of some different kind of cosmetic changes to the site. So it's still kind of being developed. So we're very fortunate that people are doing test claims. It's still the test claim process. The official contract has not been published yet, but there'll be a solid month of opportunity to claim. But this process is just to familiarize yourself and make sure you're doing it properly. We'll publish all the addresses that were in the test claim, so you know that you've done it right. So you don't need to worry about claiming your whole stash right now. Just kind of, you know, getting familiar with the process and playing with it and helping us test it.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do it from the desktop wallet and the web wallet quite easily. We have the how-to instructions there.
So y'all's desktop wallet is Fusion, and that's kind of a full interface. Like, you can run a node from Fusion, right?
Yeah. So when you run Fusion, in the background, it's running Gubic, which is the node software. So it's Fusion is a front end for Gubic, and you can do anything from deploying a contract to creating a multi-sig. even use the browser functionality for interacting with dApps. But yeah, a lot of the past year has been just building basic infrastructure, like wallets, like hardware integration, making sure that pools are up to speed. And we have a working block explorer with all the internal transactions available. So Escher is kind of our first foray into building a dApp as well. So this is going to be where we start transitioning to more of a dApp focus now that infrastructure is kind of being rolled out with things like Shoku.
I know you've talked about some kind of simple first steps in terms of utilizing the Escher token to actually make decisions and create proposals. How will the voting actually work? So let's say I've got whatever, some number of Escher. Let's say I've got 1% of all Escher in the world. I don't. How will I go about, you know, using that in terms of weight for community voting decisions?
So much the same way the claim process works. You'll have to, if you wanted to use Pyrus or Fusion, you would be signaling for a proposal, whether it be yes, no, absentee. And there's different ways we can structure proposals depending on what their focus is, what they're voting on. So it could just be a simple yes, no. It could be once a percentage of the Escher supply is reached, it executes. So these are all things that will be outlined kind of in the blog post coming this month. And it's using the same kind of contract code as the claim process, which is Carbon Vote. If you guys want to look more into it, is the the smart contract that was used. It's very simple, but we've modified it slightly using District 0x as kind of the open source governance system that we're implementing here. So yeah, you need to send a zero UBIC transaction, which if you did actually send in a UBIC, it will actually, the transaction will fail. So don't worry about accidentally sending us money. And the same goes for Escher as well. You won't be sending any Escher. You'll just be signaling what your Escher is weighted towards. And yeah, this will be something that in addition to being on Pyrus and my Aker wallet, it will have Sparrow functionality, so MetaMask. So this goes back to the conversation of why separate it into a token. So Sparrow, not to say that it's inherently unsecure, but it is definitely a hot wallet. It has a lot more, you know, you're storing tokens in your browser. So it's right. There's going to be more risk than with these other wallet options. So yeah, you could load in your Sparrow account, and then you're able to quickly and easily interact as well as other applications. So yeah, I mentioned this is a governance token. It's very much the first use case for it. So any open protocols like 0x, the decentralized exchange protocol, that could be built onto Escher, which we are hoping to do.
Can you describe more about what that means? I'm pretty familiar with 0x. So so basically you're saying they could use something like Escher for their own governance, right? Is that what...
Yeah, so 0x, it's kind of like that open source protocol for a decentralized exchange. And we're already seeing something like Bitfinex and their Nectar token. Binance, I think, is planning on building the same functionality to their token. So being that this is open source, we can easily port the same functionality into the same token. So it will be used for hosting the order books. Yeah, sorry, I'm not overly well versed in how 0x works, but I know the functionality can be transferred over.
I see. So you're talking about taking 0x functionality and being able to use it within Escher, like as part of your ecosystem.
Yeah, so this would help fund or power the decentralized exchange that would be built on UBIC. So any token that's built on UBIC would be able to use this token, and that goes to like adding new pairs and stuff. It will be up to the kind of the community to like we're building all the same token functionality that you're seeing in all these Ethereum ICOs into a token that's rewarded to UBIC holders. So. This is kind of our kind of plan for the future of having it be the de facto utility token. So even things like Raiden for payment channels, the Ethereum version of Lightning, we want to have this built onto Escher as well. And that that can be implemented with doing something like a tip bot on the Discord. So you're opening up channels with the Discord tip bot, and then in turn, you're able to send payment channel transactions to anyone else in the Discord. This is all functionality that we have kind of outlaid, and I'll describe in more detail. There was one other one that I was really interested in. Even things like Gnosis, like prediction markets, like these are supposed to be open source once they are functioning. So we can have our own prediction market running on UBIC using the Escher token as the underlying token for it. So and any cool Ethereum project that you're seeing will be built onto the Escher token.
So what's the aim by bringing in what really seems like a huge kind of array of functionality onto UBIC as a platform? Like, is this all just in an effort to make it an attractive platform for people to develop on, and that essentially equip the network with the tools that would help with that? Or what's kind of the big vision for differentiating UBIC, I guess?
Well, it's meant to be a more cohesive ecosystem. So like making, like fractaling into all these different ICOs and or utility tokens is kind of how Ethereum is approaching it. But if they are open sourcing the project, then we are able to, you know, utilize that open source code and even develop and improve it on it. But yeah, it helps make it a more cohesive ecosystem where, you know, you don't have to have 10 different tokens to do all the different functionality that you would expect on an EVM. So yeah, we want it to be, I guess, a lot cleaner platform that way of just, you know, things are a little bit more put together. Yeah, it's kind of like the past year of building all this infrastructure is for dApp developers. And, you know, some of these token protocols are very useful for dApp developers as well. Like having a DEX is useful on the back end if you need to trade your token for Ubic to pay a fee. So these are all kind of functionalities that we want to be available and to really make sure dApp developers aren't seeing any lacking features when they choose between something like Ethereum or Ubic or Ethereum Classic. Like having these extra functions really keeps us in line with the feature set that you'd expect from an EVM. Yeah, that's important for even like corporate partners who want to build on the chain. They want to know that the features are still available to them if they choose our chain over another.
Have you been successful in having conversations with people building dApps or interested in building dApps? What's that conversation look like? One of the things I'm trying to comprehend, because really it seems like 80% of the development activity is on Bitcoin and Ethereum. So then you have just a massive number of tokens, networks, platforms that are fighting for the 20% or trying to be there almost like an insurance policy in case Ethereum implodes or something, you know? This is just me trying to be honest, trying to get the mindset of someone working on a platform. In the use case that Ethereum becomes like Netscape was in the browser wars and it's dominant at first and then it, for some reason, is no longer dominant, then that gives room for others to excel. But barring that, like, so barring Ethereum's total collapse for whatever reason, how do you engage people to be interested in building on this network and this platform and either not Ethereum or not any of the other dozens of networks at this point that are trying to pitch being different than Ethereum?
Well, being different than Ethereum is really going very much against the current. Like the Solidity is the new standard in smart contracts. Even now we see like Rootstock, which is going to be the smart contract layer on Bitcoin, that mm-hmm. is using the EVM. So these are these first versions of these kind of computers that are being built, and they're all running the same operating system. For something like Neo, for example, to come in and say they want to have a different scripting language, there is a huge burden of the work to be done, not only to push the ecosystem, but also secure the ecosystem through like testing. Like there's been a monumental amount of testing in the Ethereum ecosystem, making sure that contracts have been deployed for a long period of time in the public space, that if there were any exploits, they would have been found. So something like an ERC-20 is pretty much infallible as a smart contract where there isn't really any attack surface like to expose. So being that the EVM is the standard, the next step is now interoperability, bridges, the internet of the EVMs. So there are projects who are trying to do this in a decentralized way, like Cosmos and Aeon, to link the different EVMs together. So if you send a transaction, you're able to send a token from one network like Ethereum to another network like Ubic. This is functionality that we saw coming when we were first kind of outlining what we wanted.
What do you mean when you say send a token from Ethereum to Ubic?
So right now, like there are some centralized bridges that if I sent Ether to an address, which is a smart contract, through an offline link between that address on Ether and that address on UBIC, it would then release Ether based in, as a UBIC token on the UBIC side back to your address. So the addresses are all compatible. So you can load the same private key into the UBIC wallet or the Ethereum wallet and see what tokens you have on both networks. So there's opportunity there that say I have my token on Ether. I'm like, man, these transaction fees are just so damn expensive. So I'm going to send 100 of my token to the bridge, and then that's going to release 100 token back to your address on the UBIC network. Now you're paying your transaction fees in UBIC, which are less than 1% of the cost. So you can have all the same functionality in the EVM in a different environment that is far lower cost. So this was a meeting that I even had yesterday with a project of they've already kind of issued their token on Ethereum, but they want to be more platform agnostic. So this will allow tokens and dApps and a lot of the functionality you see in the Ethereum ecosystem to exist on any EVM, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's Ether Classic, Quantum, or UBIC. So we saw that need for the that utility for the standard coming early on, and now it's even kind of being built into other token or other older projects like Doge. So if you guys really want to dig in deep into this and keep be on the cutting edge, look at the Doge Ethereum bridge to eventually have some eDoge or maybe even a uDoge.
Nice. Yeah, I'll link that up, the Cosmos network, in the show notes. That's pretty interesting. How are y'all looking at other stuff that seems super popular right now? And I don't know if it's popular because of its utility functionality or if it's popular because it gives another reason for people to find speculative value in a token. Those big things that I would look at now are proof of stake and masternode functionality. And I know there's a lot of there's potential value there in terms of governance and creating commitment to the project. How are you looking at that, and how do you see that potentially fitting in with the UBIC network, especially as Ethereum has a public plan in terms of trying to go proof of stake?
So with regards to proof of stake, like before we were actually one of the only projects to transition from proof of stake back to proof of work. Like we saw some of the issues forming early on with proof of stake, and really it kind of consolidates the network in terms of who is able to participate in consensus. There are other just like long-term effects of it as well. But the one thing I always point to is that proof of stake is not fully permissionless. There, you need to ask permission to enter the network. Like someone needs to sell you coins. So having an element of proof of work is very important. That's why being kind of the enthusiast that we are in the UBIC community, we look at every project to see what the benefits are. And something like Decred with their proof of activity and their hybrid model is very intriguing to us in terms of how we can really, you know, implement this in the future. So following the Ethereum development roadmap, they are planning on doing proof of stake, but it's going to be rolled out in stages of hybrids, starting off with like one in every 20 blocks being proof of stake. Which I would imagine in the long term, that's probably where we're going to end up is a hybrid model, but it's not going to be without thorough testing on the Ethereum network and an overwhelming vote from the Escher holders. That's where I really can see the future of the kind of our development roadmap. But things like masternodes, I mean, we are going to have some polling on it, but I assure you I'm going to be voting against it because masternodes, I think they don't provide enough service for the inflation that they create. It really just becomes a hedge in inflation for more well-equipped miners. So I don't really see the benefits of having masternodes implemented. It was a great marketing piece for the last 6 months because it it really ups the hold game for a lot of these projects. But I don't know, they I feel like it comes in waves. I remember masternodes being a big thing a couple of years ago. Same with privacy. Privacy is always a hot topic in the industry. We kind of get these waves of all the privacy coins start going up. I think Ethereum has that on their roadmap as well with using ZK snarks. So we can implement that through a hard fork, but it's, again, something we want to see more thoroughly tested. Like, I think it has a lot of opportunity in the smart contract language to have some more private variables on the chain. The encryption is so good, we don't even really know if it's broken. So I'd like to see some more development happen on Zcash and more utility of it on the Ethereum platform before we give that option to our users.
Does that kind of go back to the whole pitch of, you know, Ethereum's looking at doing something like this, and we'll roll it out once we have confidence that it can, you know, be the proper solution for our customers or like our stakeholders?
Yeah. It goes to our more risk adverse nature of, like, you know, this is a platform for finance, and like to say to a financial institution when you're pitching any product that, oh yeah, you're going to have to upgrade it every 6 months. Well, they're not going to like the idea of that. Like, there's still people running Windows XP. Like, that's how slow some traditional enterprise business works. Like,
it almost seems like you're phrasing Ubiquiti's relationship to Ethereum in the opposite way that, say, Litecoin relates itself to Bitcoin. So Litecoin does get some of Bitcoin's development for free, but also a lot of times they'll take a Bitcoin idea and they'll say, we'll snap this on Litecoin, no problem, no big risks. We'll be the test bed. And y'all are essentially saying we're going to be the reverse of that. So Ethereum is pretty well known for not being particularly risk averse, being a bit bold with a lot of proposals and throwing out ideas. So you're the opposite of that. You're saying we're going to be the conservative one in the room. We want to be a place where someone can go for reliable blockchain functionality for the long term.
Yeah, and this goes back to us. We're not a competitor to Ethereum. We're a complement to it. Like, we are pushing the same standard, and we're kind of providing an option for people who want to build with the technology today without worrying about the uncertain tomorrow of untested features or general risk that kind of comes with being that bleeding edge. And it's not to say that we're don't want to innovate. We do have some of our own initiatives. Like, there is another programming language that works on the EVM that we're actually putting together some documentation for. So everyone's very familiar with Solidity, and Solidity gets compiled into bytecode, which you then copy and paste into your wallet to be a smart contract on the chain. There's another language called Viper, which is a lot more similar to Python programming, and it compiles to the same bytecode, and it allows you to program in a different language, but still have the same functionality of the immutable ledger of the EVM. So this is something that we were like, this is an opportunity for us to really, innovate and, push out some new features for the Ethereum ecosystem, some new resources, and we want to make sure we're giving back as well. And even open sourcing some projects too is how we can kind of make sure the relationship goes both ways.
What is exciting to you right now in terms of what's happening in this whole space? I think part of, you could call it an advantage of a down market. No one that's invested in the space or committed to being here likes when prices are down. But I've seen some people say when you get the speculation out of the room, or you lower the speculation levels, then you get to building real stuff. So in terms of building real stuff and getting true stakeholders, people interested in the technology, what we can bring to the world with all this, what's exciting to you? Because if you're involved in a project, you have to care about the technology. You're not just here for the speculation. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, like 2015 was one of my favorite times to be in the space, but it was also one of the most difficult ones because there was very little price movement that was interesting to the average Joe. But it was very much a development cycle. Like, that's when Ethereum was really coming into fruition. It was being built in the background and then was finally launched and being improved upon. So even now, if we for 6 months have another development cycle of just, you know, sideways price or even a little bit of a downtrend, I look forward to it. I think it's good for the general kind of sentiment of the space in terms of making sure that people who are here for the right reasons really, you know, putting the burner under some of these projects are like, yo, it's not just about raising capital. You actually have to deliver some of this stuff. Like, don't be spending all your dev funds on boat parties and at the Miami conference. Like, there's better opportunities for being an overfunded startup. So, I think one of the more exciting things is definitely bridging. Like, you know, the interoperability of chains is a huge thing. Seeing some competitors actually launch to Ethereum. I mean, EOS has kind of been getting a little bit of flack in the media, I think, recently because...
John Oliver.
I really enjoyed that piece. I think EOS deserves to have the burner behind it because what startup really needs more than $1 billion to deliver a product? It's a little absurdity. So... I'd like to see, you know, something even like Tron, like where their development roadmap is very similar to something like what Ubik is, like where they're going to launch, you know, their own version of the Ethereum platform to host contracts on. Just seeing what happens when, you know, people actually need to mine it and it's more than just a speculative token. So that's some of the things I'm looking forward to, is just seeing some of this stuff actually launch and seeing what happens when that does, if it actually has enough of a community to really sustain the system. Because community at its heart is what's important for any project. Building a community is the most difficult thing to do. And if you do your token right from the beginning, or your project right from the beginning, community should be at the core of it, where the value lies and where the opportunity for the future comes from.
I'm looking at Tron right now. Even as depressed as it is, it's still a $2 billion market cap today. It's interesting. You know, some people that I know very well and respect, they would essentially lump anything that's not Bitcoin or Ethereum and say, you know, these are all just, for lack of a better word than the community parlance, they would just say these are all just a bunch of, you know, shit coins. How do you set yourself apart? And let's say you have someone that's trying to say they want to get involved in this project, or if it's just a speculator, you know, someone looking at it and saying, hey, this is something that's got a $70 million market cap and it has room for much more. How do you differentiate Ubik when many would view the lack of funding as a downside because you don't have a $1 billion war chest to guarantee that you can hire 100 developers to toil away? You know, you're working off of community efforts. So how would you ensure people looking to get involved in the project, whether from a speculative side, and you don't have to address that part as much, I can do that, or from a participation side of things, to ensure to them, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're going to exist. This is a project that's real. And, you know, we're not just going to die away in a bear market, because a lot of coins are going to die away. Like,
oh yes. Yeah. Like, and that's something I've been familiar with since, you know, joining the space in 2014, and like, you know, ICO projects come and go, but like, projects with without the funding, like you know, people will come and go just because not having the ICO or not even having a pre-mine removes a lot of burden from entry, like because, you know, like if I'm not getting paid, what's to say that you should be getting paid? Like it kind of puts us in the same mantra of the Bitcoin space. And that's the same with the Ubik Corporation. It's like we don't extract value from the network. It's all going to trying to build onto the network. Like, we as a company are more successful when Ubik does succeed. To say that, yeah, the Ubik Corp should be paying me is like, well, try and ask a Bitcoin company to pay you for, you know, committing to the repo. Like, there's we're trying to take the best elements of every project we do see. The UBIC community has been around for a long time to really just take the industry for what it is. Like it's very much an experiment. And how can we, you know, build the best blockchain product available? Is to take the best elements of all the projects that we see succeeding or building cool stuff. So that's where, you know, taking elements like monetary policy, proof of work mining, no ICO, no pre-mine was very important from the Bitcoin side of things. And then taking the technology of smart contracts and the ability to kind of improve with backwards compatibility was very important from the Ethereum side. And then, yeah, we look at other things like Decred for how can we improve, governance model in the future. So we, this has just kind of been like a community effort of like, how do we build a project that we think can be self-sustaining? And that's where, you know, make it more of an open source project. And we will have the startup. We will have the UBIC Corporation with its own kind of business plans and model, but at the heart of it, it's like the UBIC blockchain it is its own thing. Like it's very separate from the corp. So if you want to participate, I mean, by all means, just come and ask questions. You don't need to hold UBIC to hang out in our community. We have lots of people hang out. Like back when we were in Slack and Bittrex had a bit more free time, like we had Bill and Richie kind of hanging out and asking questions, wanting to know more about the industry. It was a place where companies like Coinigy were able to get their start. Like it's always been like a really good selection of people from the industry, people who have a lot of knowledge to give, and they're happy to share it with anyone who comes to ask the questions in an enthusiastic way.
One of the other routes that some projects have gone, even if they haven't had a big ICO or something like that, has been to create other mechanisms for essentially funding community initiatives. And, you know, right now UBIC is, in your latest report, you said there's 20 Bitcoin and 14,000 UBIC for, you know, essentially funding stuff, whatever that is, whether it's marketing or development or whatever. That's not a lot, you know. I mean, it's not a small amount of money, but it's not a lot relative to trying to build a big project. And especially when you compare it to, whether it's Zcash or Dash or some of these with huge war chests where there are funds essentially built into block rewards that go back to the project. Is that the type of thing that would be potentially in the future for building a more fair or whatever you want to call it, like a more regular flow of income that could go back to the project? Or do y'all want to steer away from that?
Well, 20 Bitcoins is a fair amount of money. There's a lot of people.
No, I'm not trying to say it's not. I'm just saying it's not what people are raising in ICOs, like even an average Joe ICO, you know?
No, I don't think any ICO should be raising more than 20 million. Like even 5 million is probably good for a startup. Like, come on, folks, let's be reasonable.
Not going to get a lot of argument from me there. I'm just noting relative to what we're seeing in the industry, 20 Bitcoin's not a lot.
So I mentioned earlier that we did have one officially kind of supported ICO, which was the APX. We made sure early on that it was structured with network development funds. So profits from the project, 5% of them go towards developing UBIC. So we are very fortunate that in the last year, like that crowdfund was literally last like May, so it hasn't even been around for a year, and we've been happy as hell to receive the 20 Bitcoins from it, and then the community donated 14,000 UBIC. But there is opportunity for more donations to come in. But this is kind of how we want to structure any ICOs that are planning using the project. Is like you should be also donating back to the infrastructure. It's the same as Bitcoin was very donation based early on. Like, oh, cool, here's bitaddress.org. Like, I created a way that you can make nice paper wallets. You know, send me a donation if you can. And even Andreas, he was rewarded for his efforts too through a donation. Like, that really is the structure that we like to have, because it allows for there not to be a situation where the money does run out. Like where their people are like, well, I'm not going to keep doing this. Or the UBIC Corporation is dissolved. It has no more funding. Like, no, the development fund will kind of serve to grease the wheels of a lot of projects that we want to see built. That's where we're kind of the custodians of these funds right now as the UBIC Corp, but we're using the proposals and the governance model to really help decide where it should be spent most. So if you want to put up a UBIC billboard for a marketing plan, like that's always an option. But like, we want to, you know, try and incentivize more developers to come work on the project. Cause that's a good way to, try and build your portfolio piece of developments is go do some bounty work. That's how Luke got his start. He was just doing bounties for a lot of different projects in the space, and then ended up building a really reliable open source block explorer. So we see that it's this initial 20 bitcoins is going to be a good way of kind of starting the governance process, and there's going to be, I think, opportunity for more funding to come in beyond just like APX and their NDF. I think opening up the addresses for donation will probably yield some pretty good results, and we have some other opportunities there, but we want to do like the traditional startup kind of as a separate thing, and there is some overflow. Like the Einstein project, some of the work we are doing for it is actually spilling over into the governance side of things, like the same proposal system that we're building for Einstein to manage their internal company governance is the same framework you're getting as a participant in the public ecosystem. So we got to thank Einstein for kind of funding some of our development time on the Escher project. That sort of cool thing. And I'd like to see more things like be structured this way. Like the company we're also working on our own hardware project, Signum, which is kind of a biometric version of the Ledger wallet or a Trezor. So instead of a key pass, you actually are using your fingerprint or even iris scanning to unlock your funds. And this isn't meant to be like cold storage. This is meant for more ease of interaction of your hardware device. So something that the corporate world has been really interested in diving in more to, but that would actually provide a little bit of funding mechanism for the UBIC company.
If you were advising someone else starting a project today, it doesn't have to be a competitor to UBIC, but another blockchain-based project, what advice would you give someone based on doing something well and designing it to last based on the experience that you've had so far?
Beta testing. I mean, if you truly believe in what you're doing, I think you should be allowing the public to play with it, at least because a lot of the space is powered by open source. And I think opening up your GitHub to the public is really important to making sure that like anyone who is working on something similar is able to maybe collaborate with you. But it also shows that you've been working on something for, say, 6 months. And then if you do, say, go to the route of doing an ICO because there is a valid use for a token in your system, it shows that it's more than just a white paper or a pie in the sky idea. Like, this is something that you've been working on, been beta testing, done the proof of concept. It's ready for the token. Like, don't make your first priority do the ICO. I understand it's very alluring to try and just get the quick money, but if you want to have a greater chance of success, you got to put in some of the groundwork, and then some of that might be in, like, the regulatory side. Like, I think that's the main conversation going on right now, as regulation is really knocking at our door.
Yeah, how are y'all addressing that? I guess both for ensuring that the UBIC token can remain listed and not be a security, but also for working with tokens on your platform to either properly work with governments to be a security or prevent being classified as one.
Well, that's we made sure, you know, follow the Bitcoin model, at least no ICO and even no pre-mine. Like, we are as regulatory compliant as you can get. Like, if you think that we're a security, then Bitcoin is a security. So it's we have the utility of, you know, being able to run smart contracts. And even with the Usher token, we're being very careful on the language to say that this isn't really a dividend. This is kind of a more of a tool for participation, like and having the primary focus not be getting trading on an exchange. Like, it's very much has a use case, and that's the primary use case for it. Trading it's not a use case that we are actively working towards. I think that's where we do save a lot of ourselves a headache. But we have a great legal team too. Yeah, we're very fortunate that we're in a very good regulatory space in Canada as well. Hopefully we don't learn too much from our neighbors to the south with the panic and fear that you guys are instilling. So
yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff happening here from a regulatory sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've gone well over time, so I should stop now, but I could talk to you for a while, I think. I appreciate you, I guess, sharing with me. If you want to leave someone with, you know, kind of a final thought about, and let's maybe address traders, because I have a largely trading audience, I think. What would you recommend for traders in terms of what you hope their takeaway would be from an interview like this, learning more about how a project works?
The no ICO, no pre-mine with the monetary policy means there's a very set rate of inflation. So like, we are network fuel, but we also function as a currency very well. Like, our inflation goes down every year in January. So that's a pretty good fundamental event. And then we're doing the Usher airdrops 4 times a year, which should result in some of the UBIC that's on exchanges to be pulled off for the claiming process. So those are, you know, good fundamental events. If you guys want to check out our latest quarterly report and see when they're scheduled to happen, you can kind of plan your charts around them.
Cool. Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate you joining me. And if people want to learn more about UBIC, you can go to ubicsmart.com. And as a final disclosure, I did at the very beginning, I do hold UBIC and have for a good while. So I appreciate you being on. Yeah, that's our disclosures. We both have UBIC. I hope you have more than me. All right. Well, we'll catch y'all next time. Thanks for joining us.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.